Again. Once again, like I was some stray kitten, the Supremes kicked me out of the astral plane and into the ordinary world, demonstrating what they thought of me. I'm really at a loss with those guys. When they need it, I'm just great, a true hero, etc. But when they don't, I'm a run-of-the-mill elemental shaman, and get out of here. Moreover, they just openly reneged on their own words, revoking the title of High Shaman, which they had granted me in the presence of official witnesses. It's like there's a renegade developer among the others who really, really dislikes me and keeps trying his best to harm me. Recalling my meeting with James, this seemed like a reasonable explanation. What if he had bet on us winning the battle at Altamita? It was looking like I wouldn't be able to complete this labyrinth. They had even blocked my apprentice quest. In that case, what's the point of heading further down the corridor if all I'd get in return is a headache? If I collapse from the pain, I'd be utterly useless. And then, as I grasped the handle of the leftmost door, I almost lost it completely. I have experienced fear before in my life, and I can say with certainty that it had never been as intense as it was now. My terror was so distinct that I could barely take a hold of myself and open the door. My hand shook treacherously, my legs were weak, but I clenched my teeth and took a step into the corridor. They could all go to hell with their dumb trials. I'll test my own self. At the fifth step, I collapsed to the ground and rolled up into a ball. Shutting my eyes, I tried to tell myself that everything I was experiencing wasn't real, and that none of this existed. However, I simply couldn't convince my wavering legs that I had to move onward. If Barleona simulated bodily functions a bit closer, my diapers would have lost their immaculate appearance. The terror fettered me, destroyed me, suppressed me, and so, whining shamefully, I began to crawl back to the door. I simply did not have the strength to stay in this corridor any longer. Like a cork from a champagne bottle, I came flying out of that door and slammed painfully against the opposite wall. Phew! A sense of relief gave me the chance to think again. One thing was clear. The first corridor was closed to me, since feeling all that again was... You know what? No, this is no way to go about things. It was time to re-examine my logs. It was time to stop thinking like an ordinary NPC and start thinking like a player. 1645-23. Corridor of Trials chosen. Fear. 1645-24. Player subject to psychic attack. Fear level 1. 1645-26. Player subject to psychic attacks. Fear level 2. Paralysis level 1. 1645-31. Player subject to psychic attacks, fear level 3, paralysis level 2, stress level 1. A psychic assault? What a bunch of jerks! I glared angrily at the first door. From here on out, I am going to forget that the other doors even exist. If I can't make it through the corridor behind the first door, then there's no point in calling myself a shaman. To hell with my training and the trial. I am now faced with a personal test. My own personal trial. I had no success summoning a spirit that would block psychic attacks, even though I tried my hardest for an hour. My head began to ache again. But now at least I understood why. The Supremes, at the behest of the developers, had blocked my normal summoning ability. I would have to traverse this corridor on my own, without resorting to any undocumented functions. One day, a son was born to the head of the dragons. The lizards decided to celebrate this momentous occasion in their customary manner, by destroying several settlements in honor of their masters, sacrificing to them the souls of the city's inhabitants. 20 cities were razed to the ground, but that did not suffice for the tarantulas. They had become too satiated with the souls of these races and wanted some new essence. This was when they decided to taste dragon. They confronted the head of the dragons with a demand, either he or his son. The next day, following the sacrifice, the head of the dragons and his brood were seen flying over Barleona as if nothing had happened. 20 cities, and his own flesh and blood. He was ready to surrender the entire world to the tarantula's paws, so long as he could retain his power. The siren refused to shut up, spinning her tails about the dragons. Now she'd cooked up a story about how Draco was sacrificed to the tarantulas, who consumed his essence. Lies and provocations. If that had actually happened, it wouldn't have been possible to reincarnate Draco as my totem. There's nothing left to reincarnate once the essence's been destroyed. On the other hand, if this story really had happened, I'd definitely feel a bit uncomfortable as a dragon. Who would enjoy being the son of a killer, a traitor, and a generally weak creature? One doesn't choose one's parents, but one can always disavow them. Wait. What's got into me? I'm trying to deal with a psychic attack here, not my sentiments regarding the dragon race. With enormous difficulty, I suppressed my desire to enter design mode and craft myself some anti-psychic item. Despite all my self-esteem, I would never believe that the devs had tailor-made a special dungeon for me. No. No doubt, several shamans had already completed it, and the siren was a mere member of some larger supporting cast. The filling always remains the same, even as the garnish changes to taste. So it followed that, were I to use my jewel-crafting abilities, I would perhaps conquer the corridor, and yet lose my right to call myself a shaman. Only now did I understand that the right thing for me wasn't gold, or other players' opinions of me, or even my relationship with Stacy. No, the right thing for me, the most important thing for me, was myself. The person I really was, and not the tinsel and ornaments that surrounded the true me. Not the person who everyone tries to hide from themselves beyond the screens of daily life, rules and habits, excuses such as, I'll get to it on Monday, or first thing in the morning. The true person. The kind of person who can ask himself Dostoevsky's question, whether I am a trembling creature or whether I have the right. Who am I really? My next approach to the door was easier. Calling on my emotions, anger, and certainty that I had to go through with it, I managed to scatter my fear. It's worth noting that my logs made no mention of psychic attacks, and yet last time I had great difficulty even grasping the door handle. Now, however, I had no difficulty at all opening the door and staring into the long corridor leading into the darkness beyond. It looked like I would have to go all the way. 1721-11. Corridor of Trials chosen. Fear. 1721-15. Player subject to psychic attack. Fear, level 1. A trembling passed through my body. My muscles tensed, as if expecting a blow. I pursed my lips and held my breath, yet the fear-level one attack felt entirely bearable. At the same time, I realized quite clearly that if I continue to move forward, I will collapse in a paroxysm of savage panic. Something had to be changed. Elemental shaman class confirmed. Looking through my logs for some hint, I came across this entry from an hour ago. I was about to scroll onward, but my eyes kept returning to this entry. Elemental shaman. The Supremes had confirmed that I was an elemental shaman in their view, and not a high shaman. So it made sense to operate within the bounds of my newly updated class. I reached into my bag for the tambourine, the item that defined me as a shaman, the one that enabled me to summon spirits. Wait, what if the tambourine's purpose isn't to summon spirits? What if it has some other function? Back at the mine, I had managed to summon the spirits with an ordinary pick. I only acquired the tambourine later on. And yet, despite all this, the tambourine is the main tool of any shaman, including a great shaman. Backpedaling out of the corridor of fear, I sat down before the doors again and tried to hash out my thoughts. Something told me that I was digging in the right direction, and so. First, a shaman needs a tambourine with which to summon spirits. At the same time, he may perform the summon without the tambourine, as has been proven several times. Second, a shaman must have a tambourine. It is one of the main attributes that distinguish his class from other classes. When a shaman reaches the level of great shaman, he no longer has to use the tambourine because something happens. What that something is the question I need to answer right now. Third, the altar. Even though he can summon spirits, a shaman incurs a penalty that can be mitigated if he makes a sacrifice on the altar to the spirits. This raises a natural question. What does the tambourine have to do with anything if the penalty is applied regardless? A wicked thought crept into my mind. What if the tambourine isn't exclusively for summoning spirits? What if it has another purpose? The head of the Thracinians told me that I had strayed from the way of the shaman and can only return to it if I help another player become a shaman. But what if I misunderstood him? The shaman has three hands. Kamlani, a class-specific mechanic that allows the shaman to summon spirits. I pulled up spirit summoning mode and immediately ceased drumming the tambourine. I waited for the mode interface to vanish and struck the tambourine again. The head of the Thracinians had said that I had to forget what I had read in the book, since wisdom could not be transmitted through paper. One cannot be a shaman by name only and not in spirit. He was right and wrong at the same time. I agree, it is difficult to understand, and more importantly, accept what is written in a book. Sometimes it's even impossible. This is why I'd read it, more to increase my spirituality stat than to become stronger. But what if everything that was written in the book was true after all? What if it made sense to speak of shamanism only when the shaman's soul was flying or seeking in the realm of psychic reality? And Kamlani serves to induct a person into a special state that resembles sleep, and that the spirit summoning mode has absolutely nothing to do with any of this. Kamlani is an act of artistic creativity. If a writer or artist discovers new knowledge through their work, then a shaman discovers it through Kamlani. The need to practice Kamlani is an inner urge. It begs quietly for a chance to surface, like any other human urge, and indulging it brings peace and well-being, while ignoring it brings torment. These lines from the shaman book appeared in my mind, suddenly gaining meaning. This is what I was doing, pronouncing my key phrase even as a high shaman. At an instinctual level, I felt that I needed Kamlani, despite the fact that I could summon spirits without it. This is why I had one foot still planted on the way of the shaman, without even knowing it myself. Kamlani wasn't a mere class mechanic. It was the driving internal urge of any shaman, and one of the main challenges was realizing and accepting this urge. Why, a player could play as a shaman for 100 years without recognizing the depth that Kalatea had invested in this class. I am sure now that in real life she is either a shaman or, considering where she resides, a sorceress. Only someone who profoundly understood the principles of shamanism could recreate such subtlety in a virtual game. He who invokes Kamlani must either sense or see the spirits. This takes place in a state of heightened awareness and active fantasy. Frequently, fear plays a helpful role in this, regardless of its grounds. A shaman cannot make full use of the spirits in an ordinary frame of mind. He must enter a state of awareness of the third reality through whatever means is convenient to him. Once in this state, he can see the spirits and work with them, even as his mind continues to perceive our world. A shaman is a person who is captivated by his imagination. Unlike everyone else, he trusts it. Opening my eyes, I stared at the wall before me, utterly unaware of it. How foolish I was! It didn't matter how powerful the spirits I summoned were. Their strength was secondary. Spirit summoning mode had been invented as a cover for those who were incapable of comprehending the true powers of a shaman, which reach much further than the ability to quickly summon 8 entities from their slots. If I am right, Kalatea had conceived of something else in our class, and I was about to test how right I was about it. Either I remain an ordinary shaman, as the siren considers me to be, or I will become her apprentice, despite the war between our races. The shaman has 3 hands. Again, my legs wavered treacherously. A shiver gripped me. But I managed to take a hold of myself and struck the tambourine. Boom! The echo scattered along the corridor, rending the ageless silence. Boom! A second beat followed the first. Boom! And behind his back, a wing. Step. Boom. Another. Boom. A third. Boom. The even beating of the tambourine bewitched me, filling me with its cadence. Strange. I can see the corridor, and I know that I am walking along it. But at the same time, it's like I'm in a different place where the corridor's psychic attacks cannot reach me. From the heat upon his breath, 10 steps. Boom! Boom! It became more difficult to walk, as if a powerful wind was blowing against me, trying to topple me to the ground. So I increased the tempo of my beat. That part of my consciousness that remained in the corridor was going insane. It was not simply terrified. It was fogging over, spewing fantastic images, painting pink elephants and flapping crocodiles. Yet Kamlani allowed me to retain a second part of myself, one that was somewhere far away, in a place that the corridor could not reach. shining candle-fire springs.
"Greetings, great shaman," boomed a mighty voice,
forcing my split consciousness back together, the one that was all but dead in the corridor of fear, and the one that was far away. The corridor vanished, and I found myself in a round stone room, devoid of any decoration whatsoever. Across from me, a transparent, watery vortex wavered in place, embroiled in some chaotic dance. It resembled the elemental we had fought in the dark forest, albeit more transparent and somewhat different in form.
"I am pleased to see you in my domain. I am the Supreme Spirit of Water. All of the spirits that you summon are my children."
"You have acquired a new class ability, communication with Supreme Elemental Spirit. You may now speak with the spirit of your element and through him summon entities that far exceed your own rank."
"You have taken a long time to reach me, shaman."
"I have indeed," I agreed. "Perhaps I never would have come at all if not for the siren."
"Nashlazar is a very wise shaman," roared the vortex. "When you become her apprentice, heed her every word and gesture. She is the only one who can help you become a harbinger. Cornic and Prontho are her apprentices and have already done everything they could. They cannot lead you beyond the level of high shaman. You are in the midst of a trial right now, so it is best that you return to your world. I hope that you have learned now how to properly visit me, and I hope to see you many more times. We shall meet again soon, shaman."
"Great shaman, confirmed." Another flash, and the room with the elemental spirit changed back into the corridor of fear, which no longer had any fear in it. A simple corridor with walls of stone receding into the distance. Turning around, I saw the open door I had used to enter. I had only managed 10 to 15 steps. It's scary to even consider the intensity of the mental assault that a player would experience in another 100 meters. Why, it might make one lose one's mind.
"When Commandant set in motion the cataclysm that would bury all the tarantulas, the dragons made an attempt to seize power in this world. The tears and groans of thousands of sentients soared to the sky, forcing Iluna to descend into our sinful world. Children, elders, and women were being burned alive. They were being destroyed solely because they hadn't any wings. Iluna expelled the majority of the dragons to the other world, but a few of them remained. And so a bloody hunt got underway."
An interesting take on the events that I had already heard about from the guardian of the treasure vault. So it turns out that the dragons left because Iluna asked them to? And yet they were involved in xenocide? That's bad, of course, but no, it's just bad. And I can understand the plague sacrificing her life to fight these winged monsters. Remembering how the girl reacted when I turned into a dragon, the horror that filled her eyes, the developers had struck the very chords one prefers to leave alone, one's care for children. I continued to walk down the corridor, but the siren's last statement refused to let go of me. Commandant had triggered the cataclysm, uniting the disparate peoples into the Empire. It follows that there were people living in the world during the reign of the tarantulas, Of course. The tarantula cult. It's clear now where it came from. A faction of humans obsessed with power, like the dragons, decided to resurrect their one-time rulers. This really does help clarify the description of the Eye of the Dark Widow. And yet, why doesn't it mention that it was Carmondant who'd triggered the cataclysm? I know so little about both of my races. Well, at least now I'm curious to find out more.
You have completed the Labyrinth of Desires, Shaman.
I walked 200 meters or so down the corridor, went around the corner, and came face to face with Nashlazar. The siren continued to look on me haughtily, as if my success had meant nothing to her whatsoever. By the way, it's strange, but basically, I had only faced 2 trials, Draco and the Doors. How did I manage to miss out on the High Shaman title? Are they really going to demote me after all?
Harbinger, I greeted my senior. I can't believe it, the siren smirked. The dragon bows before a siren.
My being a dragon makes me no better and no worse than a siren, I replied. At the moment, I am not a dragon, but a great shaman who wishes to become a high shaman.
Yes, you are a great shaman at the moment. It is downright amazing that you managed to progress so far into the labyrinth. Yet I wasn't mistaken about one thing. Your mere desire to become high shaman was not enough to pass the 3rd trial. After all, you are a dragon, the same weak, powerless, jealous gecko as the ones I used to know. You shall never become High Shaman, for to do so, one must have something that is utterly alien to a dragon. The will, and the ability to sacrifice that will.
The Harbinger is mistaken, I said, as calmly as I could. If the siren likes to speak meanly, let her. I'll use it to my advantage.
I am prepared to face the last trial and become High Shaman.
It is you who are mistaken, Great Shaman, said Nashlazar,
suddenly stripping any hint of condescension from her voice and shaking her head sadly.
You have grasped the meaning of being a great shaman, the ability to speak with your elemental spirit. And yet, you are a dragon. You can try to become a dragon and summon any spirit, and I assure you, you will learn many interesting things. You have shown yourself to be a very capable shaman, perhaps the only one next to Kalatea who really understands the basis of shamanism. Yet you can progress no further. My condolences.
Summoning spirits is prohibited while in dragon form.
Really? I can't for the life of me recall whether I ever summoned spirits while in dragon form. But if the siren is lying, then...
I realize you have no reason to believe me, repeated Nashlazar sadly. Before your trial, I warned you that I would lie to you and try to lead you from the path. But such are the rules of this trial. You would not have become a great shaman if you hadn't managed your own emotions and answered me. That was a trial that you passed with honor. But even in the labyrinth, I never once lied to you.
Not even once? I couldn't restrain my sarcasm. Certainly not when you sent Renox's son as a sacrifice to the tarantulas. Were his essence truly consumed, he would never have been able to become my totem. The siren looked me in the eyes, and very slowly, emphasizing each word, said, "I swear, with all my powers, and invoke the Supreme Spirits and Iluna to attest that during the dragon's trials, I never once uttered a single lie." A shimmering aura surrounded the siren, confirming her words and forcing me into a true state of shock. How was this possible? "I swear, with all my powers, and invoke the Supreme Spirits and Iluna." The siren did not content herself with the effect she'd already achieved, and continued, "that the head of the dragons, whom Mayan calls Renox, personally gave his only son, a mere babe, to the paws of the tarantulas, and then looked on as they consumed his son's soul." Another glowing aura appeared around the siren, forcing me to completely reevaluate my relationship with Renox. He looked on as they destroyed Draco? I don't understand anything at all. "I swear, with all my powers, and invoke the Supreme Spirits and Iluna." The siren, it seems, had decided to finish me off. "That for the savagery and iniquity that the dragons committed, the goddess Iluna cursed them and stripped them of their ability to hold different classes. From then on, dragons were only dragons. Never warriors or paladins, priests or shamans. Thus, a dragon cannot summon spirits." When the shining aura once again surrounded Nashlazar, I did not know what to do. One doesn't throw around such oaths in Barleona for nothing. "But Renox's son is my totem," I whispered at a loss. "A mere totem, not a living entity. You confirmed your title of elemental shaman and learned that a totem is only a reflection of his owner's essence. My apprentice tried his best to imbue this truly unique totem with functions not common to totems. For example, the ability to speak with others apart from his owner, as well as a partial memory. But your totem will forever remain only your totem, never the son of Renox. You are a unique dragon. You have a second essence. It is in that essence that you communicate with spirits, and it is in it, through that essence, that you managed to complete your confirmation in the labyrinth. And it is to this essence that the Supreme Spirits granted the title of High Shaman, despite the fact that you had not proven yourself. I bow my head before their wisdom. They knew that you would be capable of completing this difficult path. I was incorrect, and I admit it. Your human essence may be instructed and may become a harbinger, but the dragon cannot. It is unfortunate that your dragon essence is the dominant of the two. Please accept my condolences." "Dominant? You are a dragon, and can never escape this fact. But you can be adjusted. In effect, nothing will change for you, except that your human essence will become the dominant one. I must warn you that this is a very painful procedure. If you are unable to bear it, you will remain in the grip of your dragon essence." "Wait. I can undergo a modification and become a human again?
No. You are a dragon and shall remain so forever. But, like I told you, you are a unique dragon who has two essences. At the moment, your main form is your dragon form, not your human one. If you agree to undergo the adjustment, your dragon essence will become secondary, and the human one primary. I'll remind you again. As long as you're a dragon, you cannot summon spirits. When you become human, you will have no difficulty doing so.
What do I need to do?
Agree to suffer pain. Face it without uttering a word, and reject your dragon essence.
Reject it?
Yes. As it happens, that is the easiest part of the procedure. I told you about what the dragons did in Barleona. So all you will have to do is say that you reject their cruelty and their deeds, and that you are not prepared to be a dragon. A shaman cannot be cruel and bloodthirsty. Guernica is the best example of this. As soon as you say that you refuse to accept the cruelty of your ancestors, that you condemn all the evil that the dragons committed, I will begin the ritual and alter your true essence. But I repeat, you can only become a high shaman through tremendous pain. The change cannot happen otherwise. After that, I will pronounce you my apprentice and teach you everything I know. Tell me, Dragon Man, are you prepared to become my apprentice?
But you already offered me the chance to become your apprentice. I continued to resist.
Absolutely correct. Regardless of whether you decide to change your essence or not, you will continue your studies under me. Only, depending on how you choose, I will teach you completely different things. In one case, I will teach you the depths of shamanism and groom you for being a harbinger. In the other, I will simply make sure that you know how to work with your supreme elemental spirit. The depth of your studies is left to you, and you need to make this decision now. But are you prepared to reject your desire to be a dragon? It doesn't seem to me like you are. Like I told you in the very beginning, it is unnatural for dragons to forego their desires. So again, accept my condolences. You were a very promising shaman indeed.
Do you wish to undergo the essence adjustment procedure and reject your dominant dragon essence?
Two buttons, accept and decline, appeared before me, forcing me to think carefully yet again. Am I ready to become a high shaman and study to become a harbinger? Or will great shaman be my ceiling in this game? On the one hand, the ability to teleport all over Malabar. On the other, good relations with NPCs located in another world. The opportunity to plumb the depths of my class versus the acceptance of my race's history. Self-fulfillment versus a relationship with a filicide. To hell with all this. I am a shaman.
Well, that is your choice, the siren said calmly. Before I render my final verdict, explain your decision.
A shaman hasn't the right to reject his history. I am a dragon. No matter how good or evil my ancestors, they were mine. It is not in my power to change history.
I can only accept it, and endeavor to understand it. You are right. The dragons who lived in the past are strangers to me, but forgive me, Nashlizar. It would be an honor for me if you would teach me how to be a true, great shaman.
I can see now why Kornik was so confident about you.
Nashlizar smiled sincerely and kindly, as far as sirens are even capable of doing so.
You are prepared to sacrifice yourself for your convictions and ideals. This is exactly how a true shaman must act. For him, there are no greater authorities than his ancestors. And it doesn't matter one bit who the ancestors were in their lives, good or bad. They are, above all, ancestors. Let us go, my apprentice. You have much to learn.
Harbinger Nashlizar offers you the chance to become her apprentice. Do you accept?
The siren cast me another satisfied glance, turned, and languidly slithered towards the labyrinth's exit. I managed a single step after her, before stopping. Once again, two buttons, and once again a turnaround in my poor shamanism. It was with surprise that I realized that, in this moment, there were neither victorious harps nor triumphant fanfares playing in my spirit. To the opposite, I was filled with a terrible emptiness and exhaustion. I felt like I had just lost the most valuable thing I had and replaced it with a forgery.
"Are you coming, apprentice?"
inquired Nashlizar, noting my indecisiveness.
"Forgive me, Harbinger."
Shutting my eyes so as not to see the siren's reaction, I blindly pushed the decline button. I can only have one teacher in this world, Kornik. You may assist him in teaching me, direct him, advise him, but you cannot take me from him or him from me. Forgive me again. I expected any possible reaction, but silence. Screams, accusations, insults, sarcasm, but not silence. And the silence was so much worse. Finally, I opened my eyes to make sure that the siren was still there, and she was. She loomed right above me.
"Oh, worthy foe," Nashlizar intoned. "It is too bad that I did not meet you during the war. It would have been interesting to do battle with you. Accept this gift, O High Shaman."
High Shaman confirmed. "You have received the Dragon's Rage pendant. Description: the pendant is tied to your dragon form and may not be removed or altered while in human form. Dragon form duration increased by twofold. Set type: unique to the race. Requirements: dragon rank 5+. You have completed the Labyrinth of Desires."
"What?"
"Kornik," said the siren, and the goblin appeared beside her.
"Your apprentice has managed to surprise me. I grant you permission to divulge to him the details of the labyrinth, but only after he renews his Altamida quest. He has only 2 hours left. Once you tell him, I will be expecting you. There is much we have to teach you. It's never good when a teacher has nothing left to teach her apprentice. Now go, and, oh, foe, remember, you are an earl."
Chapter 13. A Random Encounter.
"Kornik?" I cornered my teacher, intent on forcing an answer from him.
What was Nash Lazar talking about?
Can we do this later?
Whined the goblin, screwing up his green mug.
You still have a castle to deal with. You don't have time for such trifles.
Cornick, I refused to surrender. What was Nash Lazar talking about?
My, you're an annoying one,
muttered the goblin, but then grinned broadly and added,
I'd expect no less. In short, all you need to know is that the labyrinth serves as a test of shamanic class. Pretty much anyone with a totem completes it without any problems. No one has become a high shaman without meeting their elemental spirit or merging with their totem. However, for a shaman, you have a very particular relationship with your totem, so...
Stop telling me what I already know, I interrupted my teacher. Why wasn't the siren punished when she swore that Renox sacrificed his son to the tarantulas?
Oh, that's what you're on about. You see, I can't tell you this. I'm forbidden. I can say one thing. Nash Lazar didn't tell you the entire truth, only a portion of it.
Take me to Renox.
I'm not a taxi driver.
The goblin puffed up immediately. So, if I need to go to Altamita, no problem. To Annhurst, be my guest. But to that ancient green monster, suddenly you're no taxi driver? Cornick, either tell me the truth or take me to him.
In other words, you don't wish to know about the meaning of the Labyrinth of Desires? Then I have nothing left to do but say my farewells. My teacher is waiting for me.
With these words, the goblin whom I'd cornered into a corner of one of the booths in the Golden Horseshoe vanished. Not only did he leave me with the check, but he wouldn't even answer my questions. I don't think so. Teacher, I won't let this go. I must have an answer, and I intend on getting it whatever the price.
Very well. Once you reach your 10th dragon rank, you'll have to travel to unlock your 11th one, and then you'll be able to ask him yourself. There's no point in badgering an old, ailing goblin. Enough. Over and out. We'll have to put off our studies a little. I need to figure out what exactly I'm going to teach you next.
The mean-spirited little jerk must have changed some setting, because none of my subsequent calls would go through. It looked like he had some ability that allowed him to block communication with his student. How little I know. Realizing that I wouldn't have any luck getting anything further from Cornick, I went to see the High Priestess. It was high time I put an end to the business with the blessed ore. You never know when you'll need it.
Mayan, it's been a while since I've seen you,
said Elizabeth, getting up from her desk, glancing at this poor piece of furniture. A venerable representative of that family of giant furnishings, I couldn't help but smile. The High Priestess's office had changed a lot since my last visit.
"What are you grinning at?"
Beth pouted her lips, seeing my reaction to her desk.
"Who could have thought that during the 5 years of my absence, the position of High Priestess would be transformed to that of a pencil pusher. Before, the archivist would deal with all the problems, and I'd only have to tackle the ones that were unresolvable. Now, however, I have to order the wax and the honey and the brushes and even the lumber to make repairs. Even Iluna makes fun of me now. She says that she's never had such a hard-working priestess before.
"Why don't you just hire an archivist?" I suggested.
"Why, thank you. What would I do without you?"
Beth said wryly.
"You're like my savior or something."
"Sarcasm doesn't become you," I countered, with a hurt expression on my own face.
"Forgive me. I'm simply so busy that my head's spinning. Why have you come?"
"I wanted to ask you a question. You once told me about the dwarves who became a part of Carmandant's chess set. I wanted to find out whether you know of a similar story concerning two giants."
"Giants?"
The High Priestess furrowed her brow pensively.
"Probably... Did you try asking at the library?"
"I did. The librarian told me that all the giants were great, and that I'd need to specify my query with concrete names."
"In that case, I'm sorry. Nothing comes to mind. It's a little preoccupied with other business at the moment."
"You never told me what happened with your archivist."
"He disappeared. A month back, he went to the city and never returned. His service amulet is active, which means he's alive. The heralds say that he's in the city and perfectly fine, but they can't tell me anything else. All in all, I can't fire him for another 4 months, so here I am, slowly losing my mind. You can start making bets about what happens first. The archivist returns, or Iluna hires a new high priestess."
"Maybe I can help you find him?" I asked, sensing a possible quest.
"Thanks, but it's okay. There's already more than 100 free citizen priests running around looking for him. And though they've already been at it for over 3 weeks, still, this is the temple's business, and I don't want to involve a shaman in it. Nothing too scary will happen to me."
"Okay.
Listen, is there any way you could order your sisters to make me some more of that blessed ore?"
"Of course. Why not? 100 gold per unit or 2,000 for a stack."
"Beth?"
"At the moment, I'm not Beth. I'm the High Priestess. Altering essences is our duty. But I don't sense any shadow items on you. If blessing won't increase my priestess's experience, I'll have to charge you for the work. I'm already giving you a huge discount as a friend. What do you say? Do you still need the blessing?"
"All right," I agreed, reaching for the ore in my bag. 20 stacks of iron ore and 20 more of gold. I assume I can pay you on delivery?"
"Whatever suits you best,"
the High Priestess smiled, calling one of her sisters and handed the ore over to her.
"It'll be ready in 30 minutes. You can wait here. Oh, I remembered the thing about the giants. We have several statues here in the city. Check them out. Maybe you'll think of something."
The week before Stacy's and Plinto's return rushed by in a blink. Twice a day, I would travel to Altamita, burning around 200,000 gold on scrolls of teleport, and just as much on scrolls of hiding, which enabled me to approach the castle without being detected, and thereby renew my presence there. Owning a castle doesn't come cheap, it turns out. I'd spent so much money already, and it wasn't even quite mine yet. I was afraid to imagine what would come later. I met up with Svard and made a very nice deal for my clan with him. From now on, all my raiders would be outfitted with ornate, floral armor from the leading enchanter of Malabar. Chirona and he earned a +1 to crafting for the statue, as well as several points to their respective professions, so I had to promise that if I decide to form another unity in the future, Svard would be the first to be invited to it. He didn't insist on forming a unity then and there. He could clearly remember what the previous violation of the game logic had cost me. I didn't avoid leveling up my smithing profession either, raising it all the way to level 129, my current maximum. I didn't much feel like crafting rings and chains, so I busied myself by casting ingots, initially iron, and later, once I reached level 100, steel ones. The grinding consumed a ton of ore, but as a result I became the proud owner of 7 ingots of tanzanite and 2 of peridot. Even if I couldn't use the latter for anything aside from selling it, at least the tanzanite offered me the hope of creating the giant figurines. However, there was one but. I remained at an utter loss with the giants. There were 9 monuments in Anhurs, and when I learned about their histories, I discovered that any one of them qualified for membership in Carmandon's chess set. To make things more complicated, the scroll describing the chess set claimed that the images of the figurines hadn't been developed yet. So I had to put the statues on the back burner. Barca went on hiring people, so by the end of the 5th day of my forced sojourn in Anhurs, our clan was 500 strong, of whom 350 were laborers, to the joy of our financial guru, Leidy. The warrior, it seemed, had found his true calling. Of the 17 million clan gold in the budget he inherited, he had already managed to create 23 million, having already paid all our expenditures 1 month in advance, including my hops around the continent. Leidy was constantly buying something, selling it, answering his amulets and mail. He even hired an errand boy to run to the mage for scrolls and all the other necessities without distracting him from his very important business. I lost Klutzer and Eric in much the same manner. Klutzer assembled a raid party of his own and began to raid dungeons 24/7. I'm exaggerating, of course, but in the past few weeks he had reached level 167 and was spending more than 18 hours a day in the dungeons. Initially, the players he hired would argue all the time, and their composition would change incessantly. Yet, at long last, the rogue finally managed to find 50 kindred souls as dedicated to dungeon raiding as he was. Currently, he was well on his way to overtaking Magdi's party. Eric's case could not be more different. He had abandoned fighting entirely and was preoccupied with the arts. "How's your crafting going?" I asked Eric upon encountering him in the smithy. When the Emperor invited him, and, as it turned out, his spouse, to whom Eric gave his second ticket, to his palace, the warrior paid to have one of his professions removed and refocused entirely on developing his crafting abilities. "It's not," Eric growled, avoiding my eyes. "Nothing works out, damn it. I understand exactly what I need to do, but as soon as I get down to work, it's like my hands seize up. One inopportune blow, and my entire project is destroyed. I've already ruined so many ingots that I've decided to stop and pause. Maybe I need to increase my smithing some more. I don't even know." "I got you," I nodded. "Here,
Maybe this'll help you straighten out your hands. A glow surrounded us as I pulled the gladiator from my bag and handed it to Eric. You should have seen the dwarf's face just then. There was so much emotion on it, from disbelief to puppy-eyed rapture, all flashing one after another faster than a bolt of lightning. I'd never seen anything like it, whether in-game or in real life.
But this is...
Eric mumbled, examining the gladiator and cradling it in his arms like a small child.
Man, this is the...
I never imagined that my officer could be so articulate. Eric began to thrash my hand with such gratitude that I was even worried he might do some damage. What if the imitators, charged with monitoring us prisoners, decided that he had done that damage to me on purpose? Eric, cut it out! I tried to yank my hand out of his clutch, but the dwarf had latched onto it with a steel grip. You're acting like a child who's just received a candy from Santa Claus. Enough already! I managed to extricate my hand with some difficulty. You have 2 days to unlock crafting. Do you hear me? 2 days. If you don't manage it by then, I'll take the hammer back and say that it wasn't meant to be. If you make it, though, I'll give you something else.
Man, why, now, I'll... Why, this very day, I'll... Why, this very instant, I'll...
The officer continued to please me with his metaphorical turns of phrase. 2 days later, Eric brought in a unique bracer for players under level 200 and triumphantly announced that he had succeeded. The dwarf's face was filled with such joy that I couldn't contain myself, and rummaging for my belt and gloves, offered them to Eric. For a player who intends on doing nothing but crafting, plus 11 to that stat is a very wise investment from the clan's perspective. Just in case, I sent Eric an agreement to sign about the return of the equipment if something were to happen. We were prisoners, after all. There was a chance that he'd be sent back to the mine. So, as a form of insurance, no more.
"Hi, Dan, I'm back."
The happy moment had come at last. Stacy had completed her training.
"Where are you? I have so much to tell you. You won't believe it. I'm now a paladin captain and can cast strengthening of 10%.
Meet me in Anhurs. We're waiting for Plinto and then heading to Altamita.
Waiting?
He's doing training like you were. Come on over. I'll be in the Golden Horseshoe. We can celebrate your return.
I can see that you guys didn't waste much time, the girl remarked, noticing the overall clan level.
Barca convinced me to meet with a TV channel that wanted to do a story about my adventures in the Dark Forest, but to do so I had to make some changes to the official clan site first. As a result, now, the properties for every member of the Legends of Barleona included not only the clan level and its name, but also the official rating and statistics, updated live online. This feature cost us 10,000 gold per month, so I had no reason to deny the girl's request. Everyone could now see that the Legends of Barleona were a level 4 clan in 659th place in the Malabar clan ratings, and all of it in just a few weeks.
We do what we can.
Stacy, I need your help.
Tell me about it.
It didn't take me long to relate to her what Gira had told me about reaching Altamita through the dungeon, and therefore, several minutes later, a silence descended on our little table. Stacy was mulling over what I had told her, as was I, from a different angle. Why hadn't I thought about this earlier? The Emperor and the Dark Lord had warned me that only its owner or his spouse could enter Altamita, but they hadn't said a word about...
Okay, I'd need to check this to make sure. I cracked open the tome that the Narlak Council had given me, the one that outlined the rules and obligations of Barleona's aristocracy. That's it. There was a loophole.
On my own, it'll be difficult.
No one's forcing you to go on your own, I smirked, still going over the situation in my head. I wonder whether the developers were again influencing me to make this decision, or was this really another breakthrough? Slipping me a book about the nobility, the siren's mysterious reminder that I'm an earl, the incessant warnings that only its owners could enter the castle. There were too many prompts that seemed like they were pushing me in some desired direction. We'll take Plinto with us.
You said yourself that only the castle's owners could enter it. Other players are prohibited.
Read this. I offered the book to the girl, indicating the passage for her to read.
When does he get back?
Stacy took one glance at the paragraph's title and perked up. By my calculations, his training should end in a couple hours. I'm sure he'll spend the next day out in reality. He hasn't been there in a week, after all. After that, he'll pop into Barleona, where we'll meet and greet him.
I'll get everything ready.
Having taken a photo of the page, Stacy reclined in her chair.
It's looking like they yanked us out on purpose in order to adapt the scenario for three players. Dan, are you busy at the moment?
I have an offer you can't refuse.
A bunch of deviants is what y'all are, summarized Plinto when I outlined the current situation with Altamita and the plan of action we had decided on. If you think that I'll submit to such a hare-brained venture, then you're absolutely correct. When do we move out?
We have an audience with the Emperor scheduled this evening. He's the only one who can conduct the ceremony.
In other words, you had zero doubts that I would agree to your plan, correct?
You don't like it?
No, but...
In that case, enough with the fear-mongering. Dispel your black aura and get ready to hit the road. Stacy believes that the scenario has already been updated with the three of us in mind, so we'll have to show what we're capable of. How much time do you need? A consequence of both Anastarius and Plinto's trainings were auras that now constantly surrounded the two of them. When it came to the bright and positive girl, the sparkling glow surrounding her did not strike one's eye instantly. However, the terrifying, morbid, and dark aura enveloping the rogue was all but palpable. Other players cast Plinto sidelong glances and kept their distance, since, with his red eyes in its midst, the black fog around the vampire really did look nightmarish. And if I hadn't known that this person was, in actual fact, as harmless as a fluffy bunny, I'd be scared, too.
An hour or two, Plinto replied after some thought, and then added pensively, and 5,000 gold.
Excuse me?
You'll have to pay the fine for me. I'm planning to get into some trouble real fast.
Maybe you'll put off making a ruckus until we get back. Why do you need to cause trouble, anyway?
What do you mean, why? On my way here, I ran into Hellfire and his raiders. I want to try out the new abilities I acquired over the last week and a half. Dummies and dumb monsters is one thing. Hellfire and the opportunity to knock him back a third of a level is something else entirely.
Hellfire was in the capital with his raiders? Weren't they supposed to be storming the dungeon in search of a remedy for Garanika's dagger? I checked the quest description for the creation of the blessed item. The Emperor only had 4 weeks to live. So why wasn't Phoenix working hard to save him? There hadn't been any announcement that the Emperor had been saved. I couldn't understand a thing. "All right," I said. "Start getting ready, then. Let me know when I have to pay the fine. Just make sure that you don't get sent to respawn yourself."
"Don't hold your breath," smirked Plinto, and added, "If that birdie wins, I'll run through Anhurs with nothing on but a loincloth yelling, 'Hellfire is number one!' I swear on all my strength."
A dark flashing cloud congealed around the vampire and immediately dissolved in the surrounding space. The Emperor had accepted his vow. But why was it dark and not light, like for all the other players? Had Plinto really stepped over to the dark side? The one comforting thing was that despite his aura, the guards paid no attention to the rogue. It was like his red eyes and dark aura did not exist for them.
"The Emperor is ready to grant you audience," the palace majordomo announced officiously. "Please follow me."
Once again, Stacy had come to our aid with her one-time pass to see the Emperor. I don't really think it's normal that ordinary players have effectively no access to him. I don't quite get what the designers were thinking when they made such a design decision.
"Anastoria and guests."
The majordomo opened the door to the study, made his introduction, and vanished in the plush luxury around us. One second he was there, the next he was gone.